I'd like to call to order today's meeting of the House Committee on Judiciary Policy and Finance, May 6, 2011. Clerk, take the roll.
Chair Smith.
Here.
Vice Chair Shemianski.
Here.
Representative Johnson.
Here.
Representative Anderson. Representative Champion.
Here.
Representative Cornish.
Here.
Representative Grunhagen.
Here.
Representative Hillstrom. Representative Creasel. Representative Lane.
Here.
Representative Lesh.
Here.
Representative Liebling.
Here.
Representative Mazarol.
Here.
Representative Moline.
Here.
Representative Schumacher.
Here.
Representative Vogel.
Present.
Representative Wardlow.
Present.
Chair notes that we do, excuse me, have a quorum present, so the first item on the agenda would be consideration of an approval of the minutes from May 5, 2011 meeting. They are in the packet. May I have a motion? Representative Shemianski moves approval of the minutes from May 5. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. We have one bill on the agenda today. It's House File 1428. Representative Westrom is the chair. First off, I'd like to see a show of hands. Who is present besides the lady at the table? Who's present in this room who wants to be heard in testimony on this bill? Raise your hand now. I see one hand. All right, we're going to have equal time, although if we only have one testifier, I don't know how we're going to cut one testifier in half. But we're going to give you adequate time, but we are going to probably allow Representative Westrom to give us a brief overview of the bill as it stands today. The lady can then testify, and then I will set time parameters for testimony. Probably, if we have one testifier, I think 10 minutes should do it. We'll bring it back to the table for discussion, and then we will vote within the half hour or so. All right. Representative Westrom. Chair will move the House File 1428 to get it before the committee with the intention to move the bill to the general register. So therefore, I move that House File 1428 be recommended to be pass and to be placed on the general register. Representative Westrom, present the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 1428 in front of you, known as Emily's Law. Let me first clarify, this is a second draft bill that we have introduced in the House and the Senate, not to be confused with the first original draft this year of House File 306, which earlier this week I asked to have returned to the author to not confuse persons with that bill. That bill did deal with adult certification and lowering it to the age of 10 and EJJ. This bill only deals with EJJ, not any adult certification lowering from the current law, which is 14. House File 1428, what it does with EJJ is allows a 13-year-old to be prosecuted or petitioned for by the county attorney, the prosecuting attorney, to be EJJ if the judge and the court would allow it or permit it. The county attorney first would have to petition for it. It's simply a tool for the county attorney to use if they choose. Second, the judge would have to permit or grant the petition for the 13-year-old to be granted EJJ. What is EJJ? I know this committee probably has a better grasp on it than most in this legislature, but real briefly, EJJ is a hybrid approach, a second chance approach that we have put in state law for juveniles who have committed bad acts, very bad crimes, and it gives them a second chance. What this bill does under EJJ is lowers that age from 14 to 13 with a couple caveats. It doesn't allow an adult sentence to include an adult prison facility if they're 13 when they're granted EJJ. But again, what EJJ does is allows the juvenile offender to stay in the juvenile system with the second chance of, if they reoffend, the EJJ allows for an adult sentence to be hung over their heads, if you will, as a incentive to comply and reform and be a good acting citizen in their community and in their state. If they don't reoffend or mix up on their current sentence, the adult sentence under EJJ never gets implemented. If they don't comply and they do reoffend, then the adult sentence would get implemented. That's the hybrid process of EJJ. So I stress that to not be confused by adult certification. EJJ only allows the adult sentence to be stayed and used as an incentive to not reoffend, to not get into more trouble. This bill before you would allow EJJ to be petitioned for in the heinous crimes of murder, criminal sexual assault, assault with a deadly weapon, and a malicious punishment of a child. Those are the crimes that we're talking in front of us. And real briefly, it relates and it spawned out of an injustice that you will hear briefly about from the mother, Lynn Johnson. Lynn and Travis Johnson live in Fergus Falls, and their 2-year-old daughter was killed at a daycare when the 13-year-old, 19 days from being turning 14, was found guilty of being the one who assaulted and ultimately killed their daughter. Had the county attorney had these options, he has indicated, and there's a letter that we've sent around, that he would strongly have considered using them, but it wasn't an option to either petition for EJJ or adult certification. And so with that, I'd turn it over to Ms. Johnson and let her tell you more of that story, and we can open up for questions.
Ms. Johnson, welcome to this committee, and for the record, since we're making an audio tape, give us your name and then proceed.
Thank you. My name is Lynn Johnson. I would first like to begin by thanking the committee for holding this hearing today and also for allowing us to testify, for myself to testify. On June 16, 2006, our lives changed forever. That morning, I dropped off our 2-year-old daughter, Emily Lynn Johnson, at her daycare provider's house. Little did I know that would be the last time I would see my daughter smile. Less than 8 hours later, I received a call from the provider that when she went to wake Emily up, Emily wouldn't wake up and she had called 911. Once I got to the ER, I realized this situation was much more serious than I could have ever imagined. The next day, at 8:59 p.m., we held our daughter as they removed her off of life support, and she took her last breath. In the days that followed, we learned that our daycare provider's 13-year-old son, who was just 19 days shy of his 14th birthday, had gone into the room where Emily was napping, sexually assaulted her, and then violently threw her against a wall. Emily lay there for another 2 hours where her brain was deprived of oxygen, which would cause irreversible brain damage. During the weeks that followed, the nightmare continued. We were informed that the young man who did this to our daughter could not be punished or held accountable for his actions. He was too young. Our state did not allow our prosecutor to make a decision based solely on the evidence and seriousness of the crime. As the law currently stands, a person must be at least 14 years of age to even be considered to be tried as an adult. What makes this such a magical age? The person that assaulted and took the life of our daughter, as stated earlier, was just 19 days shy of his birthday. Why is our daughter lying in the ground while her killer is allowed to continue on with life with minimal interruptions? Something must be changed so that no other family has to feel the injustice we have. The prosecutor in our case has stated if she had the option, she would have strongly considered trying him as an adult. We need to give the prosecutors this option so they can make the decision based on the evidence on a case-by-case basis. Please remember, this proposed bill is only an option and not a requirement that the prosecutors have to use. We have heard some of the opposition statements. One is that at the tender age of 13, one cannot differentiate between right and wrong. Let's think about that for a moment. How old were your children when you started disciplining them and started teaching them the difference between right and wrong? Do you really believe that even a young child doesn't know the difference between right and wrong? Then why do they try to cover up a lie or blame their sibling? It's because they are very much aware they did something wrong. And this is generally referred to the petty things, not something as extreme as the beating that Emily took from the person who murdered you. Do you really believe that a 13-year-old doesn't know the difference between right and wrong? How many 13-year-olds do you know who have assaulted someone to the point of death? Imagine Emily, a defenseless 24-pound 2-year-old, who he left lying alone, unconscious, as he walked away when he so easily could have told an adult what he had done and attempted to get her medical attention. I just want to read a couple quotes that I was able to find on brain development and if it's relevant to a criminal case. Professor Stephen Morris of the University of Pennsylvania Law School, in an article debunking the use of neuroscience studies to excuse criminal conduct by teens, crimes committed impulsively are still crimes committed consciously and intentionally. Neuroscientist Bradley S. Peterson, Columbia College of Physicians and Surgeons in New York City, the ambiguities of science don't mix well with social and political causes. Remember, these teen murders got to do one thing that their victims never got to do. The murderers made a choice. The victims never had that choice. None of these brain studies see teens lack the ability to determine right from wrong or make rational decisions. Most 7-year-olds can tell you if it's wrong to kill and are able to mostly confirm their behavior to what they know to be generally right and wrong. Brains do not commit crimes. People do. My husband and I have been down here for the last 5 years trying to get the law changed so other families don't have to go through the same feelings of injustice we have. Each year, we have listened to the opposition and asked that we come to a compromise that would satisfy all parties involved. Each year, we were ignored and brushed to the side. Finally, this year, with the help of Representative Westrom, Representative Nornes, John Reynolds, and John Tuma, we were able to agree upon the current language in front of you. My husband and I believe this language is a good compromise for both the victims of violent crimes and the juvenile system and oppositions. I want to leave you with one thing. Please picture your 2-year-old daughter, son, niece, nephew, grandson, granddaughter. Now picture your loved one innocently taking a nap, peacefully in a room, all by themselves. Now imagine what it would be like not to have your loved one to hug, kiss, snuggle with, because an individual made an intentional decision to go into that room and sexually assault and then violently assault him or her to the point that within hours, him or her's brain is dead. Finally, imagine the feeling of injustice you and your family will feel for the rest of your life because the individual who committed this heinous crime is free to live with little or no punishment. That, Mr. Chairman and committee members, is what my family goes through every single day, and that is why this law needs to be passed. My husband and I have always vowed that we will be back every year until this law is changed, and our commitment is stronger than ever. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. I'd like to take additional testimony at this time. I saw one hand. Sir, if you'd come forward, if you'd give us your name, and if you're representing a group, let me hear what that is, and then have a seat and proceed. And I would like to suggest that try to stay within a 10-minute window if you can.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Martin. I'm the president of St. Paul NAACP. I would definitely stay within the 10-minute limit.
Thank you, sir.
The one part of the proposed bill before you, which is the item of discussion today that I want to draw the committee's attention to, is the expungement part. I think that's on item number 6, I believe. When Representative Westrom was in front of the Public Safety Committee, I believe he stated that juveniles can expunge their records when they turn 28. However, that language is not in the bill, and that is not true. The bill does not state anywhere in the reading that I have before me, unless I have a misprint from your website, does it indicate anywhere along the way that these items, these convictions on their record could ever be expunged. The one key to the juvenile justice system, I believe, is giving the person the opportunity to get their life back on track while they're at a tender age and while they're still developing. I wish we could stay here and say that our system was perfect the way it stands now. We're aware that it is not perfect. But if there is not an opportunity for someone who has made a mistake to at least make a plea to the judge to have that mistake taken off their record and to be able to enter society without all of the collateral consequences that come along with a criminal conviction, I think they were sending the wrong message to our children, whether they're age 14, 15, 16, 17, or 13. The language that I want to draw the attention to is this section provides that the court may not expunge a juvenile record if a child is adjudicated delinquent for a violent juvenile offense. And I just want the committee to be aware that maybe they, not this committee, but a prior committee, may have based their decision on a misstatement, and I would like you to address that. Of course, the NAACP stands against the bill in its entirety, and this has been stated several times among many people who have testified. We all join in sympathizing with the family. We understand that this is a monumental tragedy that occurs all too often in our society. However, we shouldn't use one tragic event to change penalties for all, and I think that's a significant change in the law if you do not allow expungement to be brought up at all for these type of offenses if committed by a juvenile offender. That's all I have to say.
Mr. Martin, thank you. Also, thank you for your patience. I know fourth session ran over a trifle. Any questions of this witness from anyone on the committee? Mr. Martin, thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Chair.
I see no anyone else wishing to testify. I saw no hands, therefore I'm closing testimony on this. Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, and maybe Ms. Rebecca Pirius from House Counsel could assist me with this, but our intent is that at 28 they could petition for expungement. Does Rebecca, do you have a insight on that? That
Ms. Pirius.
Help the testifier.
Mr. Chair and members, I believe the provisions that we're referring to right now is in section 260B.171, and that directs the court to keep and maintain records on delinquent adjudications until the person reaches the age of 28, and they can release those records to juvenile court, adult court, law enforcement. Section 260B.198, found in section 6 of the bill, allows the court to expunge adjudication records at any time it deems advisable. So presumably before the age of 28. And so this would add a provision that if the child is adjudicated delinquent for committing a violent juvenile offense, the court could not expunge that record.
Representative Westrom, if there's any questions from the committee of you or on this bill, I would entertain them now. Representative Champion, then Maylene. Representative Champion.
I just have a question. Well, first of all, thank you, Mr. Chair, to Rebecca, just for clarification. As the bill is written currently, and it states for committing a violent juvenile offense, when we look at the language, a violent juvenile offense, is that limited to what's enumerated in Section 21 of this bill, or does that say any violent offense, which could include if a kid, for example, was fighting on a school playground and gets charged with an assault? Because there's nothing in that section that would limit it from my vantage point, but I wanted to hear from U.S. Counsel and staff.
Ms. Pierce.
Mr. Chair and members, because that reference violent juvenile offense falls under 260B.198, it's in the chapter 260B, so that would refer back to the definition in subdivision 21 that you see on page 2, because that definition would apply to the entire chapter 260B.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Representative Maylene.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I too am concerned with the provision that addresses expungements, and I'm glad that Mr. Martin was here to testify about that today. An expungement is really an extraordinary remedy that is not used very often, and we are the Judiciary Committee, and I think that it's important that we don't undermine our faith in our judicial system. And the courts really look at expungements very seriously, and they're rarely granted. and I don't think that we should be limiting the court's ability to grant a statutory expungement under this chapter. Now, a court always has the authority to grant an inherent authority expungement because they're a third and independent branch of government, and they're able to do that. But, Mr. Chair, I do think that this provision is unnecessary in this bill, so I would like to offer an oral amendment to delete the new language in line 6.31 and 6.32.
All right, that motion is before us. Does the staff have the motion? Representative Westrom, your reaction?
Mr. Chair, yes. I would ask the members not to
Representative Westrom, suspend for a moment. Representative Maylene, repeat.
Mr. Chair, my oral amendment would to be delete Section 6 of the bill.
The staff have that? All right, Representative Westrom, your response.
Mr. Chair, members, I would urge you not to support this. To the discussion, and the intent is to have the expungement be possible after age 28. If that's not in the bill or the correctly written, I will commit and will work with the House counsel to make sure we've got that worded the way it's intended to be. To the testifier, that is our intent. But the reason for it is the family right now, after this individual turns 19, is virtually not going to have any knowledge or update from the courts and could move to have his record expunged before 28. And there's others out there that wouldn't know. He could be a bus driver. He could be other employment opportunities that would be with young children, young boys and girls, and their intent and the intent of having it in here till 28 is to make sure that while they're developing, there's not another mistake made and somebody goes unnoticed. This individual right now is in high school down here in the cities, and the principal didn't even know he's got the record he does. And
he's
some have argued
the motion, Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is on the motion. Mr. Chair, I and committee, I believe that we should support the mailing motion for several reasons. One is we should always want to be able to give the court the option to really look at each individual case, and I think that's important even here. No matter how heinous we believe something is, I think that everyone should have a right to be heard. Number two, in that process of an expungement, as Representative Maylene indicated, is not taken lightly, and it isn't something that happens routinely. But the court, once it's petitioned, looks at a number of different things. What are some of the things that the court looks at, for an example? One is victims' impact, how families. And they take all of that information into consideration before they make a decision, and I believe that it's appropriate for us to have that faith and trust in our judicial system and allow them to do so. Right now, the way the language is articulated, it's my understanding that if a juvenile is adjudicated for a violent offense that's enumerated in Section 21 or Subdivision 21 of this bill, they cannot go for an expungement. That's my understanding, and if that's the way it is, I would ask that you all support us on removing that new language because it undermines even what the author expects to happen.
Further discussion on the motion? Any further discussion on the motion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Further discussion on the bill before us? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've had considerable discussion in the Public Safety Committee on this matter, and I don't see any reason to go into that. And since the expungement issue, which was an important one, has been raised, I have nothing further, so I'll
Very
pass.
Good. Very good. Anyone else? Right. Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, now it's my understanding, Representative Westrum, that you would be amenable to trying to work out some language where the potential for an expungement could still happen for a person who's adjudicated guilty of a violent juvenile offense. Is that right?
Representative West. Mr. Chair, Representative Champion, at the age of 28 is the intention, and I'm happy to work that out with you, assuming this bill would pass and go to the floor.
Representative
Champion.
So if that's true, I would like to work with you on trying to find some language, and I would also invite Representative Moline to work with us as well in order to make sure that we can at least do something that would be a true compromise.
We'd welcome your
Representative
input.
Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Champion, I'd welcome your input, and then I would welcome your support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you both. Anyone else? I see no other indication of any further discussion. Therefore, Chair renews the motion that House File 1428 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails. Representative Westrom and your testifier, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Before we adjourn this, unless we were going to stand adjourned to the call of the chair, unless we have, this is our final hearing date, unless we have additional bills that somehow or another need to be heard, which is unlikely, or if we have informational hearings, I just wanted to close the meeting by thanking all the members of this committee, both the Republican and the DFL members, also our staff. You know, we walk into this room and we see these growing packets here, and I don't think I've found any problems with things left out. So our pages, thank you. To our other staff, research, fiscal, partisan, you've done a good job in advising your members. We've had a spirited set of debates in this room. Have we not, Representative Liebling? We've had a spirited debate. But I'm just poking at you, I'm sorry. But it's been civil and it's been respectful. Representative Johnson, thank you for your assistance on this committee. We found agreement a lot of times. Sometimes we did not. I just want to thank everyone. It's been a pleasure being chairman of this committee. And unless we have other businesses, excuse me, this will be the last meeting this session. So if there's no further business, Representative Grunhagen.
Well, just as a freshman, I just wanted to thank you and your experience, and I think we've learned a lot from you. And not saying I can't learn more in the future, but so far it's been good. And especially your assistant there, Jody, too, has been extremely helpful to people like myself who haven't been on a committee like this before. So thank you, Mr.
Representative, thank you. Also, I didn't thank our committee administrator. I really only first met him when we started up. But when he said, I'm Army, I knew that we were halfway home. So thank you, Mr. Withers. With that, unless we do have further business, Judiciary Policy and Finance Committee of the Minnesota House of Representatives will stand adjourned, subject to the call of the chair. Thank you.